My guest, Tanya Hamilton, is the writer and director of the new independent film Night Catches Us. It's nominated for an Independent Spirit Award for Best First Feature. Set in 1976, it's about a group of people in a Philadelphia neighborhood who had been members of the militant group the Black Panthers. While some are trying to settle scores from the past, others are trying to move on with their lives. Tensions between the community and the police remain high. Kerry Washington plays a former Panther whose husband, Neil, was killed by the police. Her husband's best friend, Marcus, is the man the Panthers blamed for snitching to the police and getting Neil killed. Marcus moved out of the city, but has returned for his father's funeral. Marcus is played by Anthony Mackie, who co-starred in The Hurt Locker. New York Times film critic A.O. Scott described Night Catches Us as a politically sophisticated and ethically serious film that touches deep reservoirs of anger, but is impelled more by sorrow and the desire for wisdom. Filmmaker Tanya Hamilton was born in Jamaica and moved to the U.S. with her mother when she was 8. Here's a scene from the film in which Kerry Washington's character, Patricia, is trying to explain to her 8-year-old daughter how her father, Neil, was killed.
The year you were born, 2 Panthers were killed by the police. And your father was outraged. So he and some other Panther members, they decided they were going to kill a police officer. And I tried to convince him not to. We all did. Marcus and Uncle Do-Right. But he wouldn't listen.
Did he do it?
But that's not who we were. That's not what we did. Your father became angry, disillusioned, maybe. You were 8 months old, and nobody was safe. I didn't know how I was going to keep this family together. The night they caught me, we were taking you to my parents.
Tanya Hamilton, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Your movie, Night Catches Us, is in part about the afterlife of radical activism, the impact of that on the characters a few years after. And the Kerry Washington character is a lawyer, and her goal is to help the people in the neighborhood, to bail them out when they need it, to defend them when they need it. But her cousin, Jimmy, he's 18. He grew up seeing the Panthers, but he was too young to be part of them. And he idolizes the whole idea of it. He loves the clothes they wore, the leather jackets, the beret, the fist salute, the guns. But he's totally not cognizant of the politics. So all he wants to do is be nasty to the cops and without really understanding the kind of political struggle and the social issues that created the Black Panthers, that the Panthers stood for. Why were you interested in creating that character?
I saw this film on a couple different levels. Like I felt like it needed to talk not only kind of about the waning days, but about sort of what ultimately destroyed the Panthers and the complexity of that destruction. So like there's what we know, which is that, you know, the government goes after them and sort of squeezes really hard until they pop. But I also felt like there was something about the community that was culpable as well. You know, as uncomfortable as that feels, I wanted to be able to talk about it. And I thought that Jimmy represented a couple things. One, I thought he sort of represented a lot of the kids I went to high school with in the 80s. You know, like I went to high school in D.C., and that, you know, at the time it was the murder capital, basically, of the U.S. And I knew a lot of people who died over just nonsense. And I thought, well, what's the great sadness of the demise of something like the Panthers, which is essentially at its core, at its most beautiful place, a grassroots organization that's inside of a community whose objective ultimately is to bolster that community and to help it grow and to live. And I think that the result is what you get in the 80s, which is kids who kind of, in a way, are wayward a little bit, or wayward emotionally, don't have a place to kind of be grounded. And then I think you see the certain kind of destruction that happens. And I think that Jimmy, as a character is someone who borrows somebody else's history without really fully understanding where it comes from and how it's been fought for.
But he seems to like the pose most of all.
Yeah, I mean, I think
the pose and the idea of like confrontation.
Yeah, yeah. I thought about him as like this guy who would have been, you know, like 9 or 10 when they were around, which is young enough, I think, to kind of have something make an indelible mark on your soul, but not old enough, I think, to really recognize all the minutiae. You know, it's sort of like
the minutiae, like the main the main event part, really.
It's true. Although I will say that I think that they were such fashionistas that actually is the thing that I felt like Jimmy's kind of like us a little bit. It's sort of like what we remember about them is sort of like sexy black men with guns. But it really was in the minutiae of what made them special. It was the small things that they thought of, the breakfast programs, which of course are big, but you know what I mean? It's the stuff, it's the work. That's what made them special. And then the fashionista stuff was the stuff that made them gorgeously extraordinary. You know, they were able to kind of work it.
When were you first exposed to the politics, the rhetoric, the more romantic, as you put it, fashionista part of the Panther period?
I was a painter for a long time, all through high school and all through college. And I was always a big fan of this guy, Emery Douglas, who was the Black Panther Party's Minister of Culture. And he was their artist. You see his stuff everywhere, the rays of light. I mean, people like Shepard Fairey, I mean, all of those people are very influenced ultimately by this guy. And so we use Emery Douglas's work in the film. It's all throughout the opening of the film. And then we use little pieces kind of throughout, you know, kind of the body of the movie. And
they're paintings or drawings?
They're just these massive illustrations.
Of Black Panther.
Of Black Panthers. He was their propagandist. And I think he borrowed heavily from the Chinese and from the Cubans and you know.
That kind of social realist style?
Yeah. It was very, you know, it had a Diego Rivera, you know, sort of.
The working man.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the WPA kind of, you know, the potato eating, you know, working class. And beautiful, like the colors, you know, the beauty of that revolutionary red.
One of the issues confronted in the film is whether to stay or leave the neighborhood. Both Kerry Washington's character and Anthony Mackie's character are former Black Panthers. Kerry Washington wants to stay in the neighborhood and help the people there with her legal skills, because she's a lawyer, bail them out, defend them, feed the children who don't have enough food. So she's like a professional and a community provider and activist. The Anthony Mackie character was basically driven out of the neighborhood because he's been accused of being a snitch. And he wants to stay out of the neighborhood and make a better life for himself. And it's an interesting division that you're working with there about how to respond to a neighborhood that has its problems, that has violence, that has a history of confrontation, where the police have been confrontational with them and vice versa.
What I liked about Philadelphia is that it is sort of the city of all of these neighborhoods, and that is a great beauty of this town. I thought that in the pure essence of the Panthers, that they were about community, and they were all about how do I kind of make my community strong. What I find interesting is that despite the breakup of the group, however many years ago, that all of the people that I've met who were part of the party, and again, I'm 42 years old. I wasn't a part of the Panthers. You know, I'm from Jamaica, like, you know, but they all had this obsession with where they live. And they all do things like, you know, whether it's they're part of community groups or there's a guy named Jamal Joseph in New York who was one of the Panther 21. He was, I think, the youngest member to become a part of the leadership of the party. I think he joined when he was 15, maybe. You know, he's got this group of kids. I was there a couple weeks ago and called Impact. And he trains these kids to sing and to dance. And they're just like these working kids, you know, from the neighborhood. Jamie Hector, who's one of the actors from The Wire, who's in this film, he plays Do Right, is sort of similar. It's really interesting that he has this, you know, kind of community organization out in Brooklyn where he teaches these kids how to act. I mean, I really admire that. And I think that people who are drawn to organizations like the Panthers, they all have this great desire to make the place where they live and where their kids are going to live a lot better.
Night Catches Us is shot in Germantown, a neighborhood in Philadelphia. It looks very 70s. It's set in 1976, and it looks it. How did you find locations that would look 70s enough?
Well, my sense is that Philly hasn't changed all that much since the 70s. The producers wanted to move the film out of Philly to New York at a certain point because it was just going to be cheaper for their tax credit, et cetera, et cetera. And myself and one other producer really just fought very hard to keep it here. And I think in part because I had lived here for, 9 years at that point. I was like, this is the perfect town. Germantown is this magical place, and it hasn't changed for a really long time, for the good in some places and for the tremendous bad in others. So we just kind of drove around, and we just kind of pointed to blocks that made sense for us. And, you know, we had to deal with street signs and stuff like that, that we, you know, there's some cell phone towers if you look very carefully. you know, that we couldn't get rid of because our budget was really tiny.
You use a lot of still photographs, some documentary footage of the Panthers. I guess I'm interested in if there's any of the real images that you used that were particularly intriguing or powerful for you. Part of what the Panthers did, like some other radical groups of the 60s and 70s, is really bring a knowing sense of theater to what they were doing through what they wore, through the poses that they used for photographs and for posters. Like the Yippies used theater, the Panthers used theater. And I don't mean stage theater. I just mean,
yeah.
Was any of that imagery particularly powerful for you looking at it?
I mean, I think all of it was. I mean, you know, there's some stuff of Fred Hampton that I thought was just beautiful, if him talking. I think we slowed it down in the film, but it's just him on a podium talking. And Fred Hampton is he was from the Chicago chapter of the Panthers, and he was murdered by Chicago police in his bed. And he was very young. I mean, I want to say maybe 21, 22, something like that. And I think a lot of people really thought that he was going to be the kind of replace Newton in a way, and Huey Newton, who was the head of one of the co-founders of the Panthers, because he was so eloquent and so far-seeing in a way. And he was a great community organizer. But there are some images from a documentary about him that I really loved. And there's some imagery of these guys kind of sitting around with like a gun, you know, they're loading their guns, and it's maybe there are five or six of them in a room. And, you know, and I will say one thing, there was one piece that I love so much, and it's a shot of the Panthers at, I believe it's Fred Hampton's funeral. And we use it in the film. It's a panning shot across all of their faces. They're in their berets and they have suits on and they have, like, I think, like a white flower. And it's just this panning shot of them. And it's so heartbreaking in a way. They look almost like they have been really defeated, you know, really kind of broken. And I wanted to use that shot. And I remember we couldn't find, like, who owned it, and it was, like, this big search, and there was a sigh of relief when we finally figured out who it was and that we could license it, because I just really felt like it was a, you know, it was this metaphor in a way of this punishing kind of squeeze that they go through. And then in the end, you realize that so many of them are actually just kids, 21, 23, 25, you know, just it's a beautiful piece of footage.
Since two of the actors in your movie were in The Wire, Jamie Hector, who played Marlo Stanfield, the really crazy drug dealer, and Wendell Pierce, who played Bunk, a cop. I couldn't help but wonder if you'd had worked on The Wire at all. I know you.
No, but I'm a devotee. I love The Wire. I mean, I think it's, I felt like it really, in an interesting way, like I was with Jamie Hector yesterday in New York, so we had to do something, and walking down the street with that guy, you're stopped, you know, sort of every like quarter of a block.
People recognize him. What did they say to him when they stopped him? Because really his character is like a sociopath. He's crazy.
yeah, in a very calm way.
But his eyes are really...
Yeah.
You could tell in his eyes he's crazy.
It's interesting because Jamie Hector is the opposite of that character, which sounds cliche, but it's actually very true. He's an extremely sweet person. He's not insane.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so it's funny in a way to kind of see these two personas, and people will be like, Marlo, you know, like from like across the street. And then he's so kind, you know, he'll stop and like, you know, and they'll come up to him. And the conversation is in this, you know, it's not who are you, and high, it's generally, you know, at least from my experience yesterday and a couple other times, it's Marlo. It's having this discussion as though they're speaking to Marlo, which I, you know, you hear that. Nobody's delusional. Like, they know it's an actor. And yet I think that there's such a connection to that character.
Your movie's called Night Catches Us. It sounds like it's a quote from a poem or something. No one says that line in the movie. And I'd really like to know where the title comes from.
Well, in Jamaica, there's a saying, you know, my grandmother might say, if I'm going out, don't let night catch you. And that simply means come back at a decent hour. You don't want to stay out. I mean, it's a very literal kind of thing, Jamaican patois, and it just really means you don't want to stay out until night catches up to you. When we were searching for a title, and this film had a different title for a very long time, and as the movie evolved and the Marcus character became much more of the focus of the film because it used to really be about the kid, I felt like the title that we had previously was far too sweet. So we started searching for a new one, and I felt like the film is about these people who are all running in these various directions, and I felt like there was something nicely noirish about Night Catches Us, and that it spoke in a way, if you kind of wanted to kind of dissect it, of their history, and was it going to catch up to them, and were they going to have to contend with it, and, you know, the night sort of in a way being the metaphor of one's past, and how, you know, no matter what, it was going to kind of run them over, and they were going to have to eventually kind of deal with what they were holding back. So yeah, and it wasn't my idea, actually, it was my husband's.
Oh, well, good for him. Tanya Hamilton, thank you very much, and good luck with the movie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tanya Hamilton wrote and directed the new film Night Catches Us. You can see clips on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tui Westman, Sam Brigger, John Myers, John Sheehan, Lauren Krenzel, and Heidi Simon. I'm Terry Gross.